You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kan. Thanks for being here. And as we do on Mondays, we slow down developments at the Capitol, talk through bills one at a time. Here's a rundown. We'll look at the governor's cabinet confirmations. We'll look at legislation that gives the hemp industry a boost. And we start with the assembly rule changes that would give unlimited attempts to override a governor's veto. So what do you think of changes the assembly made to its own rules, allowing them to try to override a governor's veto as often as they like? And in terms of cabinet confirmations, which department leaders or cabinet members would you like to voice support for? Who do you oppose? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, and she's co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. She joins us most Mondays. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the governor's veto powers. They're again a topic of discussion. What did the assembly vote on regarding veto override attempts in the chamber?
So under this new rule that was approved by the state assembly, lawmakers would have unlimited attempts in the state assembly to override a gubernatorial veto. That's a pretty big change because previously they only had one shot at getting that two-thirds vote necessary to do so. So this kind of just opens up the possibilities for them to do that in the future.
Okay, and so we immediately say why. Why did supporters say it's necessary?
So Republicans are arguing that they should have another shot at doing this if, say, public opinion changes, they get more feedback from their constituents about something, they're able to, you know, talk to their colleagues in the legislature a little bit more about a particular issue. You know, sometimes we see bills come back session after session, right? They don't pass one time, they can pass another time.
They get tweaked and then they come back. And
right.
Yeah.
So lawmakers, Republican lawmakers are saying that they should have that sort of opportunity for vetoes as well.
How do the Democrats feel about this?
Well, Democrats think it's really inappropriate. They think that it's kind of opening up the stage for something like we saw in North Carolina earlier this year, where Republican lawmakers held a really important veto override vote when Democrats weren't in the chamber. They were at a 9/11 memorial ceremony. And Democratic lawmakers are saying if Republicans have more shots at taking an override vote, they can do that on short notice. They can do that when we're not there. This is something that is obviously very important and has great consequence when it's done. So they don't want it to just kind of be thrown around and have it be incredibly easy to do that.
So this was one of the rule changes, being able to bring something back again and again. What were some of the other rule changes?
So these vary in degrees of kind of wonkiness in terms of their changes. So some of the other ones that are a little bit easier to understand, one would limit Democrats' ability to break for caucus during floor debates. So to take a break to discuss a bill, sometimes they'll do that when a new amendment is introduced to a bill, something changes, they just want to discuss something, decide how they're going to talk about it, how they're going to vote on it. Under this new rule change, Republicans could bar them from doing that. It doesn't preclude them from doing it in all instances. They'll still be able to do it sometimes. But under this rule, the majority, rather, I think it's really important to point out that this isn't just Republicans or Democrats. It's whoever has the majority in the state assembly can make some of these decisions. So that could be Democrats someday. Another change that Democrats were really frustrated about was a provision that would allow Republicans to set debate times without Democrats' consent. So under the process before this rule change, and will continue, honestly, is that Republicans and Democrats meet before session. They talk about how long they think they're going to need for debate, say, we want 10 hours on Tuesday, we want 11 hours on Tuesday to talk about specific things. Under this new rule, if those negotiations kind of break down and they can't agree on a time, they're going to be able to say, we as Republicans have decided we're going to debate for 8 hours and you really don't have any say in it. And that's concerning to Democrats because what happens when you have those set debate times is once you hit it, you kind of hit a brick wall and you say, this is it, we're done, we're holding a vote. And Democrats contend, you know, what if we want to have a little bit more of a discussion? What if we feel like our contribution to this debate wasn't fully fleshed out because we didn't have as much time as we wanted to have.
We're talking with Laurel White. She's WPR State Capitol reporter. What would you like state lawmakers to take up this session? What issues are top of mind in your area of the state? What questions do you have about what is happening at the Capitol, and what bills are you watching? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Nancy now, joining us from Wausau. Hi, Nancy.
Hi there. My comment on the whole thing was that I just, especially with these veto powers, I really feel that it's obstruction on parts of the Republicans to make sure that the Democrats can't get anything done.
So you feel like this has overtures of the lame duck laws?
Correct, it does.
Nancy, thanks for the call. Laurel, what do you make of that?
Well, I think that that's definitely something that was discussed in the Capitol last week, that Democratic lawmakers thought that this was kind of an extension of Republicans trying to expand their power in the Capitol. Obviously, they have pretty strong majorities in the state legislature. They took those steps in the lame duck session to give themselves a little bit more power over things that traditionally had kind of been exclusively the purview of the governor's office. So Democrats are saying again, you know, now you're going to have, under these new assembly rules, more control over debate times and when we can break for meetings and unlimited attempts to override a governor's veto. And so Democrats say they're really kind of pushing the envelope on this.
Some of these rule changes are linked to a disability accommodation, and State Representative Jimmy Anderson is joining us later here in the State Capitol Report to talk about his experience as a lawmaker who is in a wheelchair. You were there for his speech last Thursday. What was that like?
Well, it was a really, I think, singular experience for me as a Capitol reporter for a couple different reasons, one of which was Representative Anderson chose to do something called the call of the assembly before he gave his remarks, which is a procedural move that lawmakers can use when they compel every member of the state assembly to come and sit in their seats. The doors of the assembly are closed. This is meaningful because sometimes lawmakers go off into other rooms to have meetings. They leave to go to their office at certain times during debate, kind of trickle in and out of the chamber. This brought everybody in, kind of sealed the room, made it a very kind of solemn space. At the beginning of his remarks, he said, "I've been through a lot. I think after all I've been through, you should all at least have to listen to what I have to say." He gave his speech, which was very emotional. And I think at the end of it, there was really a palpable tension in the room. I feel like lawmakers were really absorbing what he had to say and really appreciative of how incredibly personal his remarks were, which, you know, lawmakers get personal on the floor sometimes. But I think to this extent is something that we rarely, if ever, see.
So do you think the assembly is likely to attempt veto overrides anytime soon?
Well, we do know that Assembly Speaker Voss told an Associated Press reporter last week that he wouldn't be surprised if the assembly took up some potential vetoes later this fall. So that isn't obviously a concrete yes or no, and we never know. Things are very mutable in the state legislature, but it sounds like it could very much be possible.
WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White is our guide as we look at the issues in front of lawmakers. And let's hear from you. How do you think the hemp crop should be regulated? What questions do you have about the policy around the hemp industry? What policies do you think are necessary for sexual assault kit processing and storage? How can Wisconsin do better? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. There is more State Cap in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is a roundup of political developments on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Join us tomorrow evening at 7 here on the Ideas Network as the candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination, they face off each other for their next debate. We will bring you live coverage and analysis from NPR. That's tomorrow night at 7, right here on the Ideas Network and streaming online at WPR.org. Right now, we're taking developments one at a time with WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White as our guide. In terms of cabinet confirmations, which department leaders or cabinet members would you like to voice support for? Who do you oppose? On the issue of sexual assault kits, what policies do you think are necessary for processing and storage? Join in at 800-642-1234. And Laurel White stays with us. Laurel, let's look at cabinet confirmations. The state Senate met Tuesday. They confirmed a number of Governor Evers' cabinet picks made up, you know, almost a year ago. Mm-hmm. So what did you see there? Who was confirmed?
So we had five confirmations last week of Evers' cabinet secretaries, one of which was his Department of Administration Secretary Joel Brennan. That's somebody that you hear quite a bit from during budget negotiations. The Department of Administration has an important role there. Four others that were confirmed: Department of Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr, Revenue Secretary Peter Barca, former state legislator, Veterans Affairs Secretary Mary Kohler, and Financial Institutions Secretary Kathy Blumenfeld.
And a number of the acting secretaries have yet to be confirmed. So who are still waiting for a vote?
So everybody else, all of the other secretaries, I think the big
one. If you did not hear your name.
Right, right. If you did not, you're still an appointee. So I think kind of the big ones that we're really waiting for votes on that have been a little bit more controversial in the Capitol in terms of having some lawmakers voice concerns. Department of Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson, that's a really big one that's still outstanding. In terms of other kind of big departments that we hear from a lot, Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So we'll be keeping an eye out for those. Of course, I think it's important to mention that, you know, the folks that aren't confirmed yet, they are just continuing on in their jobs, just like if they were confirmed.
What's taking so long?
Well, you know, it's a process where it's really kind of up to the state Senate on when they schedule these votes. So lawmakers have committee hearings where they hear testimony. They meet from these secretaries. They hold votes. Much like a bill, these appointments have to come out of a committee and go before the full legislature. So it just kind of working its way through that process in terms of scheduling and prioritizing of Senate leaders.
Well, let's look at sexual assault kits and how they're managed. The Senate took up two bills. They passed unanimously. What do these bills change?
So these are in reaction to, some folks might remember, a backlog of sexual assault kits that has been reported on pretty extensively in Wisconsin over the past few years. That backlog has since been resolved, but lawmakers wanted to kind of put some checks in place to make sure that doesn't happen again. So one of these bills would set up timelines for processing the kits, sharing the kits between different entities. So, for example, if a victim wants to report a sexual assault to law enforcement, they have a kit collected. A healthcare professional needs to notify law enforcement about that kit being collected within 24 hours, kind of get that ball rolling. Under state statute, officially, you have to do this now under this provision.
So it gives a real framework, the process a framework. And then mm-hmm. they have to store these kits, I understand, for a decade.
That's right. And there are different kind of benchmarks for storage depending on whether the kit was tested or whether it wasn't. So when a kit is collected, a victim says whether or not they want to pursue testing and identification and that kind of legal pathway or not. If they choose not to do that right away, the kit needs to be stored for a longer amount of time in state archives. Advocates say this is really important because sometimes victims of sexual assault don't necessarily want to go forward with that testing right away. Mm-hmm. But a few years down the road, they decide, you know, I do kind of want to pursue criminal charges in this. So that sets up an avenue for them to do that.
So these bills, they flew through the Senate. Will they have a similar path in the Assembly?
Well, you never know. The bodies are very different on some issues, but I haven't heard individuals in the assembly raising concerns about these bills. The second of the two bills creates an online system where victims can track where their kit is in the process to offer some more transparency for that. So I haven't heard about opposition in the state assembly that would trip these up. But, you know, you never know. And also, as we were talking about with cabinet appointees, sometimes scheduling and issues just cause things to move a little bit slower than you might think.
Talking with Laurel White, she's WPR State Capitol reporter, and you can join in. How do you think the hemp crop should be regulated? What questions do you have about the policy around this industry? We're at 800-642-1234. Laurel, let's look at hemp. In 2017, Wisconsin legalized industrial hemp. Last year, there was the federal farm bill, then legalized hemp across the country. So what did state senators take up last week?
So this is a really wonky bill that essentially what it does is it kind of brings Wisconsin's hemp laws in line with those new federal laws.
Okay.
Because what happened was is the state legalized hemp before the country did. So when the federal farm bill did that, essentially it made Wisconsin's laws outdated and put the state you know, kind of at risk for individuals who are engaging in this industry. So Wisconsin had to kind of get these technical fixes in so things could continue as they were. And we've done several stories on this at WPR, but this is really an industry that people are looking to kind of be the next frontier in some ways for agriculture in Wisconsin. This was a really popular crop quite a while ago, decades ago, before it was outlawed in Wisconsin. So proponents of this are saying we want to bring that back. We want to give this to farmers as something they can rotate in their fields and other crops, kind of provide a different income stream for some individuals in the industry.
We also saw four pieces of legislation to address Lyme disease. What are we seeing out of the legislature on these strategies to contain Lyme disease?
So these are bills aimed mostly at state parks and some things mm-hmm. happening in state parks. So there would have to be signage in state parks warning people about contracting Lyme disease and other illnesses. There would have to be insect repellent for sale in state parks and state forests. There's also a couple provisions in here that would require the State Department of Natural Resources to do Lyme disease brochures that are available for parks with information, and also to do a statewide campaign just educating Wisconsinites about Lyme disease. We are one of the highest, the states with the highest incidence of Lyme disease in the country in recent years. So this is something that lawmakers really want to put a stop to.
Yeah, yeah, certainly address, I guess, on a policy side. You're mm-hmm. seeing a lot more movement there. Let's look at the F-35. The Senate passed a resolution, not legislation, voicing their support for military jets at Truax, the Madison airfield. Break down this disagreement. What's happening over these F-35 jets?
Well, this is a really contentious debate that Madison community officials have been engaged in for quite a while. Essentially, what's going on here is that F-35s might be moving into Truax, the Air Force Base in Madison, replacing F-16s. The concern from opponents is that F-35s are going to be flying more often and they're going to be louder, and they're going to disrupt the neighborhood around the Air Force Base that has a lot of low-income housing and communities of color. So they say that this change would have a disproportionate impact on those individuals in Madison. What this resolution in the state legislature would do is really just either voice support or opposition for this move. It's really a symbolic vote. It doesn't carry really any weight with the military in terms of whether the decision is made or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it just kind of sends a message of whether the legislature is on board. So this resolution was sponsored primarily by Republicans. One Democrat was signed on as a sponsor to it. And supporters are just arguing that this is a great move for Madison. It provides long-term security and stability in terms of what the Air Force Base is going to be doing in the future. They call it, you know, a flight mission, securing a flight mission. They say it's going to create some new jobs, 64 new jobs, retain about 1,650 jobs that are already there. They really point to the economic impact. So a very certainly contentious debate in the Madison area that kind of, when the legislature takes it up, it becomes a statewide conversation.
Well, you know, people starting to call their lawmakers and lawmakers responding at the state level. But it's ultimately we have to watch what the military decides.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter. She's co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Coming up, it's news, and then the State Capitol Report continues as we examine the new assembly rules passed last week, as Laurel was talking about. We'll be joined by Representative Jimmy Anderson. If you have a disability, have you ever had trouble getting an accommodation at your workplace? Do you think all state lawmakers should be able to phone in to meetings? We're at 800-642-1234. You have a line. You can join in. We'll be back after this news update. More State Cap to come here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The Assembly passed a rule change last week allowing for a paralyzed Democratic lawmaker to phone into meetings, and it's an accommodation he requested nearly a year ago. But Democratic Representative Jimmy Anderson voted against the bill, and his fellow Democratic colleagues, they followed suit. Have you been following this? Do you think all state lawmakers should be able to phone in for meetings if they need an accommodation? Have you asked for an accommodation at your own workplace? How did it go? Join in at 800-642-1234. Jimmy Anderson represents Wisconsin's 47th Assembly District, which includes Fitchburg. Representative Anderson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, set this out for us. What does this rule change allow you to do?
So it specifically allows me to be able to call in during committee hearings and to vote during those same committee hearings. And so while it wasn't everything that I requested, at least I think it's a good small step forward.
Well, a good small step forward, but you requested these rule changes a while ago. So and ultimately you voted against them. What was going on there?
Yeah, it has been a long, frustrating journey, often filled with some degree of confusion why it has taken so long for me to get these accommodations that I ought to be guaranteed under the Americans with Disabilities Act. But and then at the end, it was bittersweet. You know, it was great that we took this step forward, but as I had asked Republican leadership when they introduced the resolution, if they included a bunch of other rules that I disagreed with that would limit the ability of the minority to be able to participate in the legislative process, I wasn't going to be able to vote for my own accommodation. And, you know, this is something that was entirely within Republican leadership's control. And I thought it was really unfortunate that we couldn't or that they wouldn't allow me to vote in support of my own resolution.
So Assembly Republicans did, though, separate the disability accommodation from the veto override rule that we were talking about earlier. Do you see that at all as a compromise here?
So I think there was some confusion as to what was accommodation and what wasn't an accommodation. I would say that the only accommodation that I agreed with was the allowing me to use the speakerphone. Now, they passed a bunch of other rules that limit the amount of time that we're on the assembly floor, but that had nothing to do with my disability or the accommodations I asked for. You know, outside of the speakerphone system, I asked Republican leadership if we could schedule our floor sessions at reasonable hours and to end overnight sessions. And their response was to basically manipulate the rules so that way the minority wouldn't have as much time on the floor to debate amendments or to pull up different kinds of bills. And what I wanted was, instead of being on the floor for 12 hours, I was hoping we could be on the floor for 2 days for 6 hours. And so it wasn't I wanted to work less. It's just that I wanted to work within reasonable hours. And so all those other rules I completely disagreed with and I couldn't vote for. And so it wasn't going to be the end of the world for them to sit there and provide a single resolution that included the speakerphone accommodation. That's something that we all could have voted for, Republicans and Democrats alike, but they just wouldn't allow that to happen.
So before last week's vote, you were considering suing to get an accommodation for your disability. Are you satisfied with the assembly's actions, or do you still plan to pursue legal action here?
So I think when it comes to the speakerphone system, I think the issue is settled for myself. One of my other frustrations was that, you know, Republican leadership didn't include me in the drafting of the rule in any way. And so there's some real serious issues legally when it comes to the rule. Specifically, it only provides the speakerphone access for someone with a permanent disability. Now, that I qualify under that standard, but the ADA doesn't make a distinction between those that are permanently disabled and those that are not permanently disabled. And so I could see some real issues for another person going down the line.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, how do these rule changes collide with the ADA? I mean, shouldn't the legislature be following the ADA here?
100%. And what's really interesting is, you know, after speaking with my attorney at Disability Rights Wisconsin, one of her big frustrations was the fact that we voted on this at all. You know, the ADA is supposed to guarantee these rights for individuals like myself. And the idea that we would need the sign-off of the Speaker of the Assembly or for the legislature to vote on these, or excuse me, the legislature to vote on these rules, is just not compatible with the ADA as it currently is interpreted.
We're talking with State Representative Jimmy Anderson about new rule changes at the state capitol allowing lawmakers to call into meetings. Has an employer ever denied your request for an adjustment? Why did they determine that it wasn't a reasonable accommodation? And what did you do about it? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Representative Anderson, this is your second term as a state lawmaker. Why is this issue coming up to the fore right now? Why now?
Yeah, so, you know, after my first term, it's just like anybody who starts a new job. You know, I had never served in office before, and so it was a very new experience. And I'm still considered kind of newly disabled. I've only been in my wheelchair since about 2010. And so I didn't know what my needs were, what accommodations I was going to need. And so after everything that I experienced during my first term, I learned what I needed. And so that's why I approached my Democratic leadership at the beginning of the year for when they negotiate the changes to the rules that happens at the beginning of every session. And so that's why, you know, nothing kind of came up during my first term. But having learned my needs, I approached folks during the beginning of this term. And it's just unfortunately taken months and months and months to get this to happen.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has said that the Assembly has given you accommodations in the past and that you didn't make this request through the proper channels. He, you know, has accused you of political grandstanding and negotiating through the media. Where do you come down with that perspective?
You know, I'm just going to those are lies. I can't put it in any other way. You know, as the speaker has said many, many times, he can't change the rules by fiat. And that's how I understood the assembly rules as I read them. And so they needed to be negotiated between Democratic leadership and Republican leadership. And so that's why I approached Democratic leadership way back in February with my requested accommodations. And so at that time in February, I didn't approach the media. There were no stories about it. Same in March and same in April and same in May. For months and months and months, my Republican leadership denied my requested accommodations through my Democratic leadership. And not only that, but once they heard that I needed these disability accommodations, No one was sent to my office from leadership. Not a single one of my Republican colleagues came to ask if I was okay or if I got everything that I needed or what the situation was. And so this issue was left floundering until finally I grew fed up after missing a couple of committee hearings and went to the media and said, look, this is wrong. I'm being denied these accommodations, and I've been denied these accommodations for months, and something needs to be done.
You've been in a wheelchair, paralyzed for nearly a decade. Do you mind explaining the situation behind that?
Yeah, so it was back in 2010, and I was visiting my family on summer break between my second and third years of law school, and we were going to go out to celebrate my birthday. And we were heading out of town, and a drunk driver ran a stop sign at 60 miles an hour and slammed broadside into our vehicle. And I lost my mom, dad, and little brother and was paralyzed in that accident.
How are you doing with that? You know, now that the years have gone by, you've been in a wheelchair, you are working through your own paralysis, and lots of rehab. How is it going?
It has its ups and downs, like anybody that is deals with a disability like mine and deals with issues around quadriplegia. There's good days and bad, good months and bad. And sometimes, you know, doing this job can be difficult for me, but it's not impossible. And I think I do a relatively good job. You know, I've often heard from some of my Republican colleagues, or not colleagues, I say, but I've gotten some messages from time to time saying, if you can't do the job, then why don't you get out of there? Well, as I tell them, I have a better attendance record than some of my able-bodied colleagues. So I would say that they should probably go and talk to them first. But you live it day by day. And for the most part, I'm healthy. I'm excited to do the job. And as long as I'm accommodated, I think I can do it really well.
What do you love about your job?
It's a really special thing. I mean, I get to meet folks from all across the state that have real passions on really specific issues that they care so much about. And I get to try to take their passions and turn it into legislation or to give them an opportunity to have their voices heard. And I can't think of another job that allows me to do that. You know, I remember when I tell people why I ran for office, it was after I got out of rehabilitation, I started a nonprofit to help victims of drunk driving, and I fell in love with helping people. And I thought, how can I do this in a broader way? And running for office seemed like the perfect fit. And I found that it really is what gets me out of bed in the morning, makes me want to, keep putting one foot in front of the other.
We're talking with Democratic Representative Jimmy Anderson of Fitchburg following his impassioned plea he made last week to the entire assembly about an accommodation request he had made nearly a year ago. How does your workplace support people with disabilities? Where have you seen reasonable accommodations made? Has an employer ever denied your request for an adjustment? Why did they determine that it wasn't a reasonable accommodation? Join in this conversation, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we have Representative Jimmy Anderson of Fitchburg here on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about the Assembly passing a rule change last week allowing for Anderson, who is in a wheelchair and paralyzed, to phone into meetings. But the legislation included other rule changes that Democrats opposed, and Representative Anderson ultimately voted against the accommodation bill. Do you think all state lawmakers should be able to phone into meetings? Do you have the option to work remotely at your job? How does it work out? Join in the state cap, 800-642-1234. And Representative Jimmy Anderson stays with us. Let's go back to Thursday and that speech you made on the floor of the assembly. You called the assembly together. Everyone had to sit in there, doors closed. We were just talking with our WPR State Capitol reporter, Laurel White, who was deeply moved by that moment. Take us there. What did you talk about and what impact were you trying to make?
Yeah, so I had done the unusual thing to ask everybody to come back to their desks. And I thought after everything that I had gone through, I had before all of this, I had sent out a letter to all of my colleagues, Democrats and Republicans alike, and had talked about the letter had said that, you know, we ought to be celebrating the ADA and the idea that I need these accommodations shouldn't be a contentious one, and was hoping that everyone would sign on. And even in that letter, I talked about how the ADA was passed by George H.W. Bush, a Republican, has been championed by Bob Dole, another prominent Republican, and that we ought to be able to look past this and work together to find a solution. And all of my Democratic colleagues signed on. None of my Republican colleagues did. And I said, and so I had started from that point and kind of talked about how hurtful that was. And the reason I wanted them to sit down and listen to me was I felt that I've been ignored for a long time and they ought to hear what I have to say. And from there, I talked about what it's like to live my life as a disabled person and how difficult and arduous and sometimes painful it can be, how hurtful this entire experience had been for myself. And I had hoped to be able to kind of reach them at a human level to, you know, we often make big speeches about policy and broad ideas, but very rarely do these issues actually impact one of the people that works in the building. And so I was hoping to be able to talk to them one-on-one as a human being.
The Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law nearly three decades ago, as you said, by President George H.W. Bush. And we had Lindsay who emailed to say, I just wanted to comment that Lindsay admires your courage. Lindsay said this shouldn't even be a discussion and believes it should be given that we accommodate you and accommodate others, and thinks the comments of if you can't do the job he shouldn't have run are ableist and insulting. Let's take a call on this now. Joan joining us from Eau Claire. Joan, hi.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Anderson, for all that you're doing, Representative Anderson. Robin Voss and these Republicans who added all these conditions into this legislation should be ashamed of themselves. Mr. Anderson deserves to be able to be accommodated in order to do his job. And Robin Voss and these Republicans have been exposed for the very uncaring and cruel people that they are. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak.
Representative, do you think all accommodations for people with disabilities need to be met, or are there some changes that are too difficult? Is there a line here?
Yeah, I think the law does a very good job of placing a balancing test between the interests of the individual who's disabled and the interests of the people that are going to be providing these accommodations. And so there's a reasonable standard. So, you know, if I demanded that the legislature only meet in my home, I think that most courts would look at that and say, no, that's a bit too far. That's not reasonable. But at the same time, you know, what I was asking for was to use a speakerphone system that's currently being used by the Wisconsin State Senate. So the idea that this would be unreasonable has often left me scratching my head. And so, again, there's an appropriate standard that balances the two sides, and I think it's an entirely appropriate way to handle these issues.
Let's bring in Emma now, joining us from Madison. Good morning, Emma.
Good morning. Well, the last caller and the last comment, it's just exactly what I was going to say, that I work at an agency, and there are a lot of accommodations that are made for people if they're injured on the job and need to have, you know, a different keyboard or, you know, a different type of phone or whatever it is a person needs, and it is required by the ADA. And I just am shocked that we need to have some sort of bill for something that is just so simple. And as you said, that it was something that other people have used in the legislature. And I guess the last thing I want to say is that it's just sort of Voss being Voss. There's no low that's too low. So thank you.
Yeah, Emma, appreciate the call. Representative, you know, people with disabilities are far less likely to be employed than the general population. What more do you think we can do to support them legislatively, you know, in our day-to-day life? Where do you see openings for improvement?
Yeah, I think the idea of getting individuals with disabilities into the workplace stems from a lot of other issues around healthcare and, oddly enough, things like taxes, for instance. But I'll even use my part of my speech as an example. You know, as a disabled person, I often need round-the-clock care to help me get in and out of bed and to get to work and to essentially just live my life. And because I make more than what is would currently allow me to get access to state benefits, I have to pay for all of that out of pocket. So I literally spend tens of thousands of dollars a year out of my own pocket to do this job. And that's a choice a lot of disabled people have to make, where they either choose to be unemployed so they can get the benefits they need in order to get the care that they can afford, or if they take the job, they can only take a job that would pay enough to cover those additional expenses. And that's not often the case for individuals with disabilities. And so we're often in this kind of like dark gray space where we're not able to get the work that we want to be able to do. And so being able to provide that help would go a long way to helping folks like myself with my particular disability get into the workplace.
One other thing we want to ask you. Democratic Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling said last week that Republican leadership was slow walking the legislative session to make Governor Evers' impact, quote, as small as possible. Do you agree with that assessment of the minority leader there of what's happening in the Capitol right now?
Yeah, I could not agree more. I mean, I've only been here for two sessions, but I will say that I think anyone this session should feel embarrassed to be cashing their checks from the state taxpayers. We do so little. I've had so few committee hearings and so few bills being passed. And so the idea that there aren't people in the state of Wisconsin that need help or need changes to the law, or that we shouldn't be doing everything we can to be helping folks and using every moment that we have during this session to make positive progress, I think is an entirely inappropriate way to be doing our jobs. And so, yeah, I do believe that the Republican leadership has decided to do as little as possible to not give Governor Evers the chance to flex his mandate.
Representative Anderson, we only have a few seconds left, but with your speech behind you and with at least one accommodation made, what do you hope for going forward from your colleagues at the Capitol?
I just hope that they heard what I had to say and that they take a little bit more time to stop thinking about issues in such a partisan lens and start realizing that we're all human beings and we all need to work together to do the good, do good work for the state of Wisconsin.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Jimmy Anderson is a state representative from Wisconsin's 47th Assembly District, which includes Fitchburg. Just ahead, we explore the year in movies and find out what should be on our watch list this fall, heading into the big Thanksgiving season of fall movies. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us for the State Capitol Report here on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.